30th, House Water Committee. When we adjourned on Monday, we were hearing House Bill 3038. We indicated at that time it was going to be carried over for a public hearing today, possible work session, that remains at this point to be seen. And we're going to continue this with the panel that was up at the end of the last session. We're going to open a subcommittee of the committee, and with that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3038, and ask Ed, Karen.
Karen Hoskell.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, Brian.
But I don't.
He didn't show up today. You all by yourself?
Well, there are other people who oppose the bill who are here also.
Are they signed up already? Were they signed up?
Signed up, Liz Frankel and.
Yeah, we'll wait on them, Karen. In keeping of kind of the order that we were looking at going with last time, we're going to have the one panel, we're going back to the other side, have the other panel, and then back to the Water Watch, and then with the conclusion for summation, we'll have the department making presentations. So if you would, please proceed, and we will open the full committee now that we have Representative Dingfelder joining us for a quorum.
And Representative Tomei.
You're Representative Tomei?
No, and Representative Tomei.
Oh, and Representative Tomei, yes.
I would be an honor to be Representative Tomei.
All right.
Thank you.
Mayor Denton, members of the committee, my name is Karen Russell. I am Senior Staff Attorney for Water Watch of Oregon in Portland, Oregon. I wanted to begin today by clarifying something that was in the testimony of Brian Posowitz on Monday. There was a list attached to his testimony, and I think he clarified this, but I want to make sure that people understand that that list includes all the municipal permits in the state, and those permits may be in various stages of development. We tried to get a little better information from the department, but they really don't have, that we know of, a list that says, here are how many permits that are up for extension right now, here are how many municipal permits that are about to be certificated, that kind of thing. So it's a really broad-based list to give you a feel of how many permits are out there in Oregon, but not all of those permits are undeveloped or wholly undeveloped. Some of those may be partially developed, some of those may not be developed at all. And I think Brian highlighted in his written testimony and orally some examples where the permits were either not developed or only partially developed, and those are the permits, the old permits, that we have concerns about, their impacts on the resources and the effect of this bill today. So, I wanted to speak very briefly to the Dash 1 amendments that were brought forward on Monday. Basically, those amendments don't place time limits on extensions, and they only place a 20-year limit on new permits. And this limit, Water Watch opposes that 20-year limit because it's far in excess of even the 10-year limit that is already fixed by the legislature for reservoir permits.
Ms. Russell, I think you've probably heard my comments in relationship to land use planning as far as cities are concerned. And the chair finds the 10-year issue to be somewhat inconsistent with other rules or laws we have as far as cities and city planning. So, and I, you know, I understand there's a 10-year thing on the limit on the reservoirs or something of that type. I don't think that is necessarily as germane as the 20-year limit on But that's a, just for your information as you proceed through.
And I understand that. I think there are a couple of thoughts that we had. One is that a permit is a commitment of a water resource, and that the longer out, I think we've made this point before, you make the commitment before you have development, the more you will see impacts on existing users who have relied on the water that's in stream, and then 20 years later a municipality comes in and decides they're going to take the water, or on fishery resources. That's why we were thinking, as a matter of water policy, 10 years. Now, we have been open to the 20-year concept as long as we have standards in the law that ensure that if we're going to give these really long-term permits, we are protecting existing water users in a watershed as these permits are being developed, and of course that includes fish and wildlife and the recreational values of Oregon's rivers. So we also oppose the Dash 1 amendments because there's no requirement that the Water Resources Department make sure that the use still makes sense in light of other uses in the watershed. And again, we're very concerned about a bill that validates permits that may be invalid, because that's to the disadvantage of other valid watershed water rights and in Oregon's watersheds. Now, WaterWatch does have Dash 2 amendments that we have put forward, and those amendments do three basic things. They would allow longer-term permits, the 10-year timeline that we were talking about. They put a time limit on extensions, and I think from a policy standpoint, we would say if you're going to the time limit on the extension should be the same as the time limit on the permit. So what we said was 10-year permits, then a 10-year time limit on extensions. You could go with a 20-year permit, 20-year timeline on extensions, but we felt it was important that you have a time limit on extensions so that you're having some kind of periodic review as the water is being developed. Our bill proposal also says in exchange for longer-term permits, you would retain the existing good cause considerations that are in the statute that the municipalities have always been subject to, and you would put into statute language directly from the Water Resources Department's rules on extensions that require it to consider competing demands when they're looking at whether or not to grant an extension. This is language that the department uses. It only requires consideration. It doesn't mandate an outcome either way, but I think that if we're going to be making long-term commitments of the public resource and continuing to make it, then interested users in a waterway should be able to come in and raise issues and potentially get the use conditioned or maybe reduced in some amount. And there are instances that we've seen where a water district is sitting on 7 cubic feet per second of water. They can only justify 3 cubic feet per second for the next 50 years, and they've asked for an extension of the full 7. And it's on one of the more sensitive coastal streams that the Oregon, under the Oregon plan, has been working to protect and restore. We think there should be a dialogue with the state and with the applicant as to whether they should get that full 7. And so our bill amendments would require that dialogue to happen. And we also propose putting some teeth into the conservation program by saying if you get an extension, the department has talked a lot about their new water conservation rules. There's some good things in there, but there's no absolute requirement that those benchmarks be met. They can always be moved and changed in terms of conservation benchmarks. So our amendments propose that the department be looking to make sure that people are meeting the benchmarks or working towards the benchmarks in their plans. And then the final is to get at the retroactivity provision in the bill. And it basically says that the bill applies to pending applications before the Water Resources Department. And
Mr. Chair, may I interrupt for a second? May I ask a question of the person who's testifying?
Karen,
thank you.
Ms. Ross.
Yes. Karen, could you tell us where in the Dash 2 amendments you are referring the issues about which you're speaking?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, sure. And I apologize that they're not specifically in my written testimony. I just got the so as regard to the good cause determination, including consideration of competing demands, it would be Section 1, Sub A, so lines starting in lines 19 and then going to page 2, 19 through 19 through 25. So that's the standard there. So it says, so the dash 1 amendments say the department shall issue an extension for good cause. What we're proposing to do is add, in determining whether there's good cause for the extension, the department has to at least consider, and then these list of things. Some of these things are already in the statute, and some of these things are in the language from the department's rules that further clarify how the department looks at competing demands. And they do this analysis for all other permits in the state, including municipal permits issued after 1998. They specifically don't do this kind of analysis for pre-98 permits, the old ones, the ones that potentially have the greatest impact on Oregon's rivers and people who are using water now. So that's that section, and then the way the bill is structured, this first Section 1 deals with surface water permits, and the second section deals with groundwater permits. So you'll see the same language in Section 2, page 5, starting on line 10 through line 20 on page 6. And then the conservation language is page 3 of the bill, or the amendments, lines 1 through 5. And then also on page 6 of the amendments, lines 16 through 19.
It's the same issue here that, relating to two different waters or such.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make two other, and I'd be happy to elaborate more on the specifics of either House Bill 3038 or the Dash 1 amendments if people have questions, but I wanted to make two more general comments. One is that either the original bill or the Dash 1 amendments, if those are passed, basically what it'll allow is development to occur without without regard to the effect of expanded use on uses in Oregon's watersheds. And this will affect farmers, industry, miners, the commercial fishing industry, which relies on healthy fish populations, recreational industry, fish, and wildlife. And in addition, I think it's important to keep in mind that this could undermine the state of Oregon's efforts under the Oregon Plan, and especially those efforts to try to avoid the listing of coho, the relisting of coastal coho. In some recent comments from NOAA Fisheries, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, to the governor's office, they expressed concern about the possible impacts on coastal coho from the development of the very permits that this bill seeks to validate and protect from further scrutiny. And I've attached to my testimony, as Exhibit 1, the letter from NOAA Fisheries to the state, and then they have very long comments about the kind of Oregon's assessment on coho, but then the section of the comments where they specifically refer to these permits and raise concerns, and that's page 4. It's actually
page 4 of attachment 1 to the letter, which is our exhibit. So it's
second to the last page of our exhibit. So I think that's something to keep in mind. We think our amendments would address that concern by allowing, requiring the Water Resources Department to kind of look at and take into consideration those issues when they're looking at extensions. And then my final point is, we have world-class rivers in Oregon, and they're economic and biological engines for the state. Industries of all types, from commercial fishing to recreational industries to manufacturers to farmers, rely on Oregon's water flowing in Oregon's rivers and streams. And 50 years ago, the Oregon subcommittee, the Water Committee of the Oregon Legislature, issued a report that recognized the importance of Oregon's rivers, not only in terms of the economic value derived from diverting water from Oregon's rivers, but also the social, environmental, and aesthetic importance of our rivers in keeping water in stream. And basically, 50 years ago, they looked at Oregon water law and said, you know, there are a lot of changes that are being made to the law that are based on specific needs of specific interests, and we're not doing well by the state by having this jumbled up water code where we're making exceptions here and there. And so they passed in 1955, it was kind of a rewrite of the Oregon water law. And the goal of that act was to have integrated and coordinated planning and a vision for Oregon's rivers and how we use them that would be in a way that would protect a multitude of interests. And basically, this bill, House Bill 3038, is an example of a certain set of interests coming in, trying to get special treatment in the face of increasing demands and competition for water in Oregon, just what the 1955 legislative enactment was intended to avoid. Now, we recognize that municipal water suppliers have a unique need to plan for the future and to secure water appropriations ahead of time. And that WRD's past failure to enforce Oregon water law has created some expectation on their part. But and so while some form of legislation may be appropriate, we believe that the bill, as currently drafted in the Dash 1 amendments, go too far. We really appreciate Willie Tiffany and the League of Oregon Cities' willingness to work with us. At this point, it's clear we haven't been able to agree on what a bill should look like, and we continue to leave our door open. So with that, thank you very much.
Any questions at this time for Ms. Russell? Thank you very much, Karen.
And then we need to have... are we having the phone thing today?
No, he's going to person today.
I saw. So where are we at?
We have these usually
started. I know. Paul Eckley, Pat Griffiths, Doug Riggs.
Did you want Lily to introduce him?
Doug, are you just introducing or are you going to be talking?
Okay.
I'd also like to have Rebecca Geisen from the City of Portland on deck.
Mr. Chair, if I could, just real briefly to get the committee up to speed with where we were at Monday and what this panel is going to talk about, so it's relevant for the committee. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany at the League of Oregon Cities. On Monday, we had a panel to talk a little bit about what our bill did, where the case has left municipalities, and a little bit about the Dash 1 amendments. What we thought would be very helpful for the committee today is to talk about water management in conservation planning and water planning in general, because we, as we explained to the committee on Monday, we do have a different process now than we've ever had in the past in terms of municipal water development. It's a very extensive process that does address a lot of the concerns that you just heard about. So we have a panel of experts today to talk to you about that that process specifically. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Willie. First up, Paul.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Jensen and members of the Oregon Water Committee, my name is Paul Eckley, and I'm the operations manager with the City of Salem Public Works Department, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of the City's support of House Bill 3038. also known as the Responsible Community Planning Act. There's a handout, I believe, going around. And my testimony is really a series of slides that are in the handout that I hope will show the progress the City of Salem is making on preparing a comprehensive water management plan currently. Our last adopted water management plan was adopted by our City Council in 1994. I want to share with you today what's involved in preparing a comprehensive plan. And for us, there's really three subcomponents that we'll see later on in the presentation. One is a Division 86 Water Conservation and Management Plan. The second is what's called a typical Water Master Plan. And then lastly is a pretty stringent and detailed permit effort for some large projects that we have built and are building over the next few years, permitting requirements. I would like to say, too, that the City of Salem is really behind water conservation, and it is really important to us now and in the future. Since the adoption of our 94 Master Plan, the city has been able to reduce its per capita water use by about 15%, which is a substantial amount of water. And our plan, as you'll see today in the future, is to reduce water consumption by another 10% per capita, which translates into about 3 million gallons of water a day, which is also good. We consider conservation really to be a source of water in our investigation. Besides conservation, though, our plan is to continue to rely on the North San Niam River as our primary source of water into the future, with us ultimately developing the Willamette River in the near to distant future, and I'll talk about that a little bit today, too, and share that with you. Secondary sources that we have include groundwater sources within the city, an aquifer storage and recovery system that we have built since 1995, right in time for the flood, 96. And lastly, we have some intertie agreements with both the City of Kaiser to share water back and forth, and with the City of Staten up the canyon near our water treatment plant. These secondary sources not only provide a source of water for us during an emergency, but also during summertime, peak water use periods, and low stream flow periods, as well as potential drought conditions as this summer. Shown on a little bit of background about our system, and I think a lot of us here know a lot about Salem's system. On page 3, we have a watershed of about 700 square miles up the canyon, and about 7 or 8 communities along with Salem that share this water as a water resource, starting with the City of Detroit down through Salem. We provide currently today about water for about 180,000 customers. This shows 170, but it's a little out of date within the Salem area. We provide water not only for the City of Turner, also for the City of Salem, and some unincorporated areas to the east, the suburban East Salem Water District, and some unincorporated areas in West Salem also. We also provide water for homes, for commercial businesses, for schools, for government offices such as this one, and lastly, for a very large food processing industry that the city has. And a side note on that, the food processors in Salem actually process roughly, and this is a little bit of an old number, the agricultural produce from about 25,000 acres of agricultural land that are brought to Salem and processed in these plants. The first step on our water management plan is demand forecasting and looking at what are the different sources that we want to consider in the future for water supply. As shown on page 4, as I mentioned, our primary sources is the North San Niam River, and will continue to be that. And we are already looking at the Willamette River in the future. And we are actually looking at a pilot project to start using the Willamette River to irrigate some of our parks within the Salem area. Supplemental sources I already talked about. The graph at the bottom of slide 4, or page 4, shows the success we've had with water conservation over the last 10 to 12 years. And this is a graph of water actually sold that's metered, and it shows that roughly a 15% savings over the last 10 to 12 years. The top of slide 5 is really just kind of a summary of our water rights that we have currently. We have very ancient water rights on the North San Niam River that go back to the mid-1850s prior to statehood. They were all certificated at one point, and we have purchased them over time and about half of them have been recertificated by the City of Salem, with the remainder left as transfers to be certificated in the future. On the Willamette River, we have two permits. We have a permit that was applied for in the 1970s as part of a water plan done back then. Pretty aggressive amount of 200 CFS, 129 MGD. And we've also filed a surface water registration as part of the adjudication of the Willamette for about 10 CFS. And that this dates back, and I'm not that old, but this dates back to the late 1800s when Salem actually took its water out of the Willamette River. So we're taking credit for that. The graph at the bottom.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Strickley. I just wanted to ask a question regarding this point on the Willamette River. Have you used any of those surface water rights that they've been? You're saying you have surface water certificates, transfers, and permits. So how much of that 210 is certificated?
None. That is the one that is it's shown as a future use, a future need, which we do need for the city. And it is the one that we are going to start partially using for some of our parks in the near future as part of another project.
Thank you.
Okay.
The
graph at the bottom of the page, page 5, kind of shows our future projection of water use. It's a little bit confusing, but the solid line on the top is really our water withdrawal off the river, and the dashed line is our in-town consumption number, which would naturally be a little bit lower than that. Shows into the future, and it shows that in about 70 years, and we'll probably a little bit less, we will be exercising those rights on a full-time basis for the Willamette River at that point. Graph pretty much shows that Salem is a growing community and continues to grow. Next, I'd like to talk a little bit about our water management and conservation plan. It's required by the Water Resources Department for us. What I really wanted to present to you today is some of the meat behind this plan. It's not completed yet. It's to be completed this summer, the next few months, and then submitted to the Water Resources Department. The next two pages show kind of the goals of our plan, which is that 10% water reduction, and some of the benefits that we've listed during in preparation of this plan over the last couple of years. There's 10 of them, from benefits of conservation ranging from protecting human health to really, you know, demonstrating stewardship or responsibility of our resources, decreasing wastewater treatment costs, of course, delaying capital expenditures. The more water, the less water you use, the longer your infrastructure will last. Reducing peak demands on our water withdrawals, saving related O&M cost for our water system, providing expanded capacity and reliability, and it does enhance our long-term stability as a water provider. And then lastly, and probably most important, it does continue to protect resources in the rivers that we withdraw water from. The next page, page 8, is, I have to apologize for it being so small, but it really lists the 40 benchmark water conservation items that we are doing and plan to do in the future. The first top part of the page is really current conservation measures that the city is undertaking, ranging from really taking care of our water system in terms of meter replacements, old line replacements that leak to reduce leakage, valves that do leak, and water lines that leak and are replaced along with fire hydrants. External benchmarks are things that we have done over the last 10 years, range from providing toilet tank detection kits. We have an aggressive water conservation grant program for our industry. We have a full-time staff member that goes out to the schools in the Salem-Kaiser School District and spends a lot of time educating children about water conservation at their homes and related areas. The future benchmarks, some are the same, some are more aggressive. I could point out we're going to continue to improve and standardize the materials that we're going to hand out at schools. We're going to provide some financial rebates for low flush or low flow toilets, and we're going to get involved, since Salem now has a conference center, we're going to get more involved with hotel conservation programs for water, and some financial rebates for some smart landscaping tools for people to reduce water use for landscaping their homes. And then again, I think it's listed here, is our water conservation grant program for our industrial customers. We're planning to continue that.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dane Carver.
Thank you, Mr. Eckley. I just have a question. I don't see it listed on here, pricing.
Good point. We have, and I have that mentioned later on, Representative, is that the city went through a new cost of service study in 1997 where we changed our rate structure, which has helped conserve. I think that's part of that 15% savings. We went from the old traditional block rate where people got a minimum amount of water no matter how much they used for a certain dollar amount and then paid a token amount for consumption to right now our flat bill is only a few dollars, which is just the cost of the bill to process the bill, and people pay for every gallon of water beyond that. So it's helped to lower consumption.
Okay, thank you.
The two projects, one is we've gone through about a $42 million expansion of our treatment plant over the last 10 years. It's called Garen Island, and we've had to develop a habitat conservation plan working with federal agencies. I don't intend to spend a lot of time on that. I just included it for information. The tables on pages 10 and 11 really show the effort the city is proposing to undertake as part of that HCP and the dollar amount. Related to that, it's about a permanent $40,000 a year investment for us to do these items in these two pages for Garen Island. The second project is one that we have been planning since actually the early 90s, and we've built part of it is a replacement project for our transmission lines. The city has two transmission lines. The first one was built over 70 years ago that brought water down from above Staten, where our treatment plant is, to the city of Salem, about 20 miles, and it needs to be replaced. That line is both undersized and falling apart and leaks. It leaks tremendously and causes us a lot of maintenance griefs that we have to deal with each month. And so this project not only replaces that line, but it's kind of the foundation of planning, is that you pick the right size for the next increment, and we've chosen a 75 MGD capacity for that expansion. Part of that, though, the alignment is going to be crossing some wetlands and other areas, and we have to get some federal permits to do that, and we've been working with the federal agencies over the last 2 to 3 years to get those permits. We're hoping to have permits in hand either this year or next year and start construction in 2006 or 2007 and be done by 2011 or 2012 with that project now. The puzzle at the bottom of page 12 is just kind of a reminder for us all on all the different agencies we have to work with on projects, ranging from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Division of State Lands, DEQ, Corps of Engineers, Water Resources, the Drinking Water Program, and I probably missed a few. The third leg of the stool of this comprehensive water plan is really our water master plan, which is the conventional infrastructure plan. You know, how is your system going to expand in town? Which storage reservoirs do you need to add? Do we need to expand our treatment plant? When does that need to be done? And we plan to have that completed by next winter. The schedule at the bottom of this page really shows we're a little over halfway done with this comprehensive plan, and most of it will be wrapped up over the next year in time to permit the construction of that transmission line. In summary, I just wanted to reiterate that water planning is a very long-term strategy, and we really need the resources and the tools to provide a long-term strategy for our customers. A couple of examples I've shown is that the original, you know, this is pre-ESA and pre-everything, back in the early 1900s, is that it still took us 15 years to develop our original water right on the Arsanium River. It was applied for in the early 1920s and finally built and put into service in 1938. That took 15 years to develop. And our transmission line that is under planning right now and to be started in a couple of years, it could take up to 20 years. Actually, the conception of that, I show 1994, but actually it started about 1992. And depending on our financing and rate structure that we're actually able to get approved by our customers and our policymakers, it optimistically will be done by 2011. It may be a few years beyond that. So that's a good 17 to 20 years for one project to be completed. I think it was mentioned yesterday or on Monday that most of our financing is done through revenue bonds, and they are sold for anywhere from 20 to 30-year payment periods, and you really have to demonstrate to bonding companies your financial ability to repay those loan amounts, and so they want, you have to demonstrate to them that you have the resources and the ability to pay those back, and that you're going to be basically in business over the next 20 to 30 years. Lastly, is that water system infrastructure is built to last, and it's built, you know, really at the most cost-effective sizing for the community. Water lines are put in to serve anywhere from 75 years and beyond. Treatment plant components are shorter term than that. We recently put in a brand new intake at our treatment plant, and it is sized for our full water right allocation, about 150 MGD. It would not have been cost effective for the community to build that in really small increments and have to go back out and redisturb the river every 10 or 20 years and add on to that intake structure. So wise water planning, you have to sometimes step up and kind of build the next large chunk of investment. In conclusion, I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for this time to share about our water plan. We do support House Bill 3038. We're counting on it. It will help us rely on our Willamette Right permit into the future. And be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Tolman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Eckert, have you seen the Dash 2 amendments?
I don't have in front of me, but yes.
Did you have any problems with the Dash 2 amendments?
Is that the 20-year?
That not to exceed 10 years with an extension of not to exceed 10 years.
That's the Water Watch Amendment, isn't it?
Yes.
10 years is not enough.
An extension of 10 years. It's still not enough?
Not enough.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you.
Doug? Mr. Chairman, I'm going to let Patrick Griffiths go first and all that cleanup briefly, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Patrick Griffiths. I'm the Water Resources Coordinator for the City of Bend.
Then if you're not speaking, Doug, could I ask Rebecca to change chairs with you?
Sure.
If you would, or that'd be fine.
Okay.
Whichever.
Thanks.
I'm sorry for the interruption.
Please. No problem, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. Again, Ben, thanks you for your leadership on this House Bill 3038 and also all the rest of the committee's hard work on working on amendments and understanding the issue. The City of Bend takes its leadership role in the stewardship of the Deschutes Basin water resources very seriously. Bend has had the responsibility of delivering safe and reliable drinking water to its residents since 1924. Currently, we deliver about 70% of the urban growth boundary in Bend, which represents only 44,000 residents, you know, in a very large state. Our water supply includes the use of both surface and groundwater sources. I want to add here that for us it's really important to have a dual source system. It adds reliability, the ability to have a surface water source that we do share with Tumalo Irrigation District. We do get pinched back in drought periods, and we're able to make up for that pinch back with our use of the regional aquifer in our groundwater supplies. So the ability for a municipality to have a redundant supply that can back up shortages when you have those is really critical to our long-term planning. Unfortunately, right now, the current law doesn't provide the clarity and certainty that Bend and other municipalities require in order to do the responsible planning for this critical community service. Today, Bend must be able to meet the current water demand, have resources for emergency needs, we call that fire flows, and anticipate and provide for future uses during a time of unprecedented growth. As you know, our region is one of the fastest growing regions in the state, and we're having a hard time keeping up. A key benefit of the proposed legislation will begin to address the need for the alignment of the time periods mandated for land use planning. I'll give this committee an update. We just won a LUBA decision that was challenging our population forecast. Without a population forecast, you can't do the demand forecasting that Mr. Eckley talked about. That really is the basis for our best guess for the future. And without that, you really can't look ahead. So we're really excited about finally getting that cleared up and moving ahead on our demand planning. But really what we're finding is the 20-year period that's mandated on land use, if we can coordinate that with our water supply planning, we're going to have a better package at the end of that time. Let me give you an example. For us, really, it's the financial considerations of the long-term planning that are coordinated. You may recall that when Portland had the drought several years back, and they had some billing problems and some finance problems all at the same time. What happened was the pendulum swinging left to right there, they had to gut their basic staff and really almost eliminate their conservation programs and really cut them back in a time where, you know, it wasn't totally a result of that planning, but really it showed that if you have a long-term stable funding, you can build the programs off into the future to get the conservation that you need. At the same time, rates are really important, that you look at the rates, the cost of service, and building that with the future supplies that you have. And all of that, again, is responding to the rapid growth in our basin. Regarding conservation, Bend has made great strides in its effort to plan, manage, and deliver water within a framework of stewardship and integrated resource planning. And really, we're underlining the word integrated here. In 5 short years, and I'll say that we've had 1 5-year planning period under the old rules, and we're entering our 2nd 5-year period under new rules. We have embraced the latest conservation practices and are poised for even more success as we implement additional benchmarks. We encourage everyone to read the specifics of our latest conservation practices, and we encourage everyone to read the updated and approved water management and conservation plan, and we're giving the committee copies of that. Executive summaries are outlined all of our benchmarks, and they're all there for you to read, and Mr. Eckley mentioned a lot of the same sort of things that we're doing. I might add that Bend is going well beyond the requirements in the Division 86 rules, and that we're doing a lot of other community coordination in the region in order to make these things even more effective. I will also add that during the course of our approval in our latest water management and conservation plans, we had public hearings. We had 2 members of the public show up. We didn't receive 1 comment on any of our plans during any public comment periods. And I don't think there's apathy out there. I just think that, you know, what I'm trying to point out is we made a lot of efforts to include the public, include the regional governments that we work with to make comments, and everybody, we received none during the process. The bottom line, I think, is best shown in the graph that is in the back of the packet there. The graph clearly shows that full metering in concert with a strong conservation program is conserving water. If you look at that chart, you can see that the rapid vertical rise of new demand for water services is still going up, but the water production shown as the top line is really starting to flatten out. Though overall water use continues to increase for Bend, it is doing so at a much more sustainable pace. More good news indicates that a per capita reduction in the residential use is down 10% since 2002. We expect this trend to continue. We think the Water Resource Division 86 rules currently as written are working well. We believe even more benefits will accrue, but are going to require additional time to take effect. I think the same is true statewide. Conservation through efficient use of water will be an ongoing piece of Bend's water supply when coupled with thoughtful development of additional supplies. Our next plan update, our next water management conservation plan, will occur in less than 5 years. In addition to our success with conservation within our limited service area, Bend is formulating a regional approach to a new supply development plan which recognizes all the demands on the water resources, not just Bend's, for the good of the entire basin, its economy, and the environment. In keeping with this basin vision, Bend is actively engaged with other groups that now have a stake in how water is managed in Central Oregon. Some of the efforts have included being members of the original Deschutes Groundwater Steering Committee that came up with the groundwater mitigation rules. We've been participating in the BPA process and the Deschutes Coordinating Group. We've come up with a sub-basin plan that had participation from the entire Deschutes Basin, not just the upper Deschutes. And that plan has recently been improved by their group, and we're going to use that as really the skeleton framework for a full-on restoration effort in the Deschutes. We've been partners with the Upper Deschutes Watershed Council. We're working actively in helping them fund some restoration projects in the same watershed that our surface water supplies come from. We have signed memorandums of understanding with the local irrigation district so we can plan the future together. We're planning in concert our urban growth boundary development. Where's that water going to go that was on irrigated land when houses are on it? How are we going to best use that water for the good of the entire basin? We have also, and one of the things we're most excited about, is we received a Water 2025 grant from the Department of Interior. Gil Norton came out last summer and gave us the grant. We basically have about $500,000, half of that local match, half of that federal investment, that is going to bring what we're calling is really a regional water master plan. So we understand from the ag and urban side what's the supply and demand issue going to look like 20, 30, and 50 years out. And that group is working actively now to get some real numbers so we know what the future looks like. So in summary, the proposed changes in House Bill 3038 recognize and address the complexities of the entire municipal water supply process, from the local level through the state level permitting and all the other public interest processes throughout that whole issue that are required before any new water can be put to beneficial use. This bill is even more relevant for the Deschutes Basin today with the added complexity and coordination required by the new groundwater mitigation rules. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. Please let me know if I can provide any further information that might be helpful to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Tolman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick, your graph here, what is the difference between the number of water services and the number of water meters?
Let me give you a little history, Chair Jensen, Representative Tolman. Back before I was hired at the turn of the century to work for the city of Bend. I was the first full-time staff person to do conservation work. When I was hired, about, I'd say half of the residential services were unmetered and were charged a flat rate service. And so Bend, by a vote of the people many times back through history, did not meter their residential customers. And so we basically had a flat rate system. You paid one monthly bill. You could use as much water as you wanted. Pretty hard to manage a system like that. When we filed our first water management conservation plan in 1998, in fact, it was reviewed by Rebecca Geisen when she worked for the Water Resource Department. One of the conditions on that was to fully meter our system. So what we're seeing on this graph is, as the blue bar gets to 2004, we became fully metered. And so now, basically, we can throw this graph away, and from this point forward, we're a fully metered system. But what I was trying to outline is, if you look at that top blue line, the demand for water has just incredibly flattened out. We've had growth of over 1,200 service connections the last 2 years. Our peak summer day use has not increased in 3 years, and that's dramatic. And we think that's, again, our full metering program, measuring, and also the conservation effort and all the regional things that we're doing in our basin.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dinkover.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Patrick. This is really good information. I have a question about the water management and conservation plan, and I know we just have the executive summary here. But since there was an earlier discussion mentioned in Water Watch's testimony about benchmarks, can you comment on what you think about tying those benchmarks in statute instead of rule, which is being proposed? And reading through the summary of all your benchmarks, maybe you can illuminate for the committee on how you work with Water Resources Department in reviewing those benchmarks.
First of all, Chair Jensen, Vice Chair Dingfelder, that's a great question. And it was a struggle to put this plan together. This is not an easy document to create. I think the best place for me to start is to say that every single water provider and their customers are different. There are certain general trends that are the same, but climate differences, demographic differences, technology differences, when the homes were built differences, it's a dramatic difference from region to region. Bend has what I call one of the fastest growth rates in the state, and so I think it's important to understand that you're picking your best benchmarks that you can at the time you write the plan, but conditions do change and there has to be flexibility there. When we first wrote our 1998 plan, we didn't have a water conservation staff. And I think one of the things that we look back at that historical document, we realize, wow, we've gotten a lot more sophisticated. We've gotten better data. We've refined where our water uses really are. And as a good public steward, we have to prioritize our investment. Where are we going to get the most bang for our buck, the most water conserved for the least amount of money and staff time? And at the same time, commit enough dollars to build a foundation for ongoing conservation, not just quick hits, mm-hmm. but build that ethic throughout the region. And so what we've bumped up against in these benchmarks is Bend only serves a very small portion of the region, yet our PSAs, our public messages, reach to Madras and all beyond, and so now we need to start to coordinate that to really have a solid effect on a regional basis. But I think the benchmarks are really critical, and you have to start somewhere and then measure it and have that dynamic feedback loop, just like they do in natural resource planning. You have to go back, did it work, didn't it work, why did it work? What do we do to need to change it to make it better and keep having those results? And if it doesn't work, let's move to some other new technique. One of the things the City of Bend did recently is we passed a resolution for something called smart watering technology. And what this technology can do is take data from a weather station, reduce homeowners' demand by 20 to 40%. That kind of technology didn't exist 5 years ago when we wrote the first plan. So these things have to be dynamic. They have to be flexible to meet new technology, to meet new demands, and the other changes are going to come along. And then we're going to tie this to our Bend Code revision that says maybe front lawns aren't the best thing to do all, you know, throughout Bend, or maybe the commercial code has to change in order to back up some of our benchmarks. And so it's not just the water department now that we're impacting. We're impacting community development department. We're impacting county code. It really, the web starts to get out, and it gets very complex very fast. But this is a really great place to start, and you bump into those places, and then you start working together. And that's what we're doing in our region. We're having a lot of success.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Just quickly, so Patrick, I just want to make sure that my question is getting answered, and I think that's really good information. But do you think, just based on your interaction working with Water Resources Department, and like you mentioned, your city happens to have somebody who works full-time on this issue, so do you think it would be necessary to have it in law? Right now, my understanding is the benchmarks, the looking at some of the requirements for the Division's 86 rules are in, it's in rule, meeting the benchmarks in rule. So my understanding, if I'm understanding this correct, is to have, say, you would need to meet these benchmarks and have sort of this iterative do loop, like you're talking about, in law, and saying Water Resources Department has to do that. So based on your interaction, I mean, do you feel that's working well with the Water Resources Department? Is there enough staff to do that? Or do you think it has to be expanded, especially when we're looking at more and more cities that are going to be adopting these plans?
Yeah, Chair Jensen, Vice Chair Dingfelder, I think that the Water Resource Department spent a lot of time with our plan reviewing it, and we worked, we went over and met with them on the benchmarks, we talked about all of them, we clarified a lot of the issues. I think they're doing a terrific job with the resources that they have to look at this. I'm not sure that we need to tweak any of those rules at this point. I think they're working, I think they need more time to work, and I think the entire water conservation community that I work with statewide is really coming together and sharing these ideas, and I think, you know, it's an iterative process. I'm not sure a statute or a new rule is going to make that any better at this time, just because of how many other things it impacts at this place.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question I probably should have been asking earlier as well. I mean, I'm detecting a theme here, and that is that as you meter and as you talk about conservation, as you do several of the other things you've already mentioned, water use per household declines. Do you have a sense, and this may be a question others might want to address as well, is the easy pickings over? Or do you expect continued decline in water use per household? And could you tell us a little about that?
Sure. Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, that's a very good question. And to answer that, I have to move past the municipal world and think about why are these rules being put in place. It really deals with the water budget in every basin in the state. The Deschutes, I understand very well. I can't speak for any other basins. In the Deschutes, less than 1% of all diverted water is used by municipalities. We're not going to put a lot of water back in stream to repair the places that we know need water. And so that's really part of the message. I'll give you another example. I work, you know, around the state, and also I've been privy to a lot of efforts throughout the West. When I was in Las Vegas, what happened when you had the pricing coming up and the low-hanging fruit being taken on water conservation. They reached a point where literally one side of the street had heavy regulations, high prices. You know, they were using drops, and literally across the street they had cheap water, no regulations, could water anytime, and they realized this is water that's all coming out of the same basin. We better get our act together and plan regionally. So it became a basin issue, not a municipal issue. And really that's what we're asking with House Bill 3038 is we need to have some stability and certainty brought to one small portion of the use in the state so that we can do better planning, coordinate with our land use, and move ahead into the future.
Thank you. Mr. Rigg.
Mr. Chairman, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization, which includes Bend and seven other cities in Central Oregon. I'm going to be very brief and just make three points that I wanted to ensure that the committee is aware of. First of all, I want to make sure that the committee understands that in contrast to some of the suggestions that somehow municipalities under current law have been irresponsible, and that by passing this bill, we somehow will drain 2 billion gallons out of rivers, streams, and creeks in Oregon, that is absolutely not the case. And I think you need to know farther than what we've done in the Deschutes Basin over the last three sessions in Salem and with the water conservation management projects that we've been working on. Under the current law, prior to the Coos Bay North Bend case being decided by the appellate court, we were already doing conservation and management planning. We had already passed three bills through this committee in the last two sessions that established a water bank, encouraged mitigation, allowed surface-to-ground water transfers, and that was all in a good faith effort under the current law to try to get more flows in-stream and better manage the process. Patrick also just mentioned, and I can provide later this document for the committee, but the regional effort with the Deschutes Water Alliance to sit down agriculture, municipal, irrigation, tribal perspectives, conservancy groups, and together talk about how do we manage the resource, recognizing that we're only one small part of it. So under the current law, we have been, in our basin, certainly very responsible, and I think that Patrick's points bear that out. And that gets into my second point. I passed out a document that's titled Executive Summary. And if you turn to pages ES3 and ES4, I think that's what Representative Dingfelter was just asking about, what you can see is that a water conservation and management plan implemented either by the city of Bend, by the city of Redmond, by the city of Salem, as Paul earlier testified, is a very detailed, very complicated, expensive, time-consuming, and burdensome effort. And it is not window dressing, as has been suggested by some people in earlier testimony. This is a very substantive task that our citizens are demanding that we do, as well as the state. And so that part of it is working as well. And the final point I wanted to make is I really view this as responsible planning. And this bill is an effort, as we said, to give cities the ability to look long-term and do the kind of responsible planning that Patrick and the city of Bend are trying to do. It's an effort to get us beyond the kind of myopic crisis type of perspective where you've got to solve something in a five-year period. I would argue that it allows us to more cautiously approach construction and development of water rights, because we don't have to do it all immediately in a five-year period. We don't have to develop it all immediately. We can more slowly, more thoughtfully and carefully plan for that development of those water rights over a 20-year period, and I think that's very important. The cities have made an enormous effort on this issue. Our willingness to put the conservation and management plans into statute, I think, addresses the question that Representative Dingfelter just asked. Simply putting that in statute guarantees that it will be done from now on. It will be required. The details of what each city has to put in their plan needs to be flexible. And the benchmarks for each city need to be flexible as new technology emerges. But in essence, we are, by agreeing to put that into statute, making a very significant commitment that cities around the state are going to do this kind of careful, responsible planning. And therefore, we think that the bill before you is reasonable, and that's why we support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Doug. There be any questions? So at this point, Rebecca?
Chair Jensen and members of the House Water Committee, my name is Rebecca Geisman, and I'm with the City of Portland, and I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 3038. The other presenters have done an excellent job explaining why this bill is important to water suppliers and what steps we are taking to use the water we're privileged to provide to the public in the most efficient way possible. Representative Jensen, as chair of this committee, has received a letter from Portland Mayor Tom Potter in support of this legislation, and my testimony is based on the content of that letter, and I believe you either got copies on Monday or today. Okay. The city of Portland has been providing reliable and safe water to the Portland area community for 110 years using both surface and groundwater sources. Currently, Portland serves about 25% of the total urban population in Oregon. The city fully supports protecting the ability of growing municipalities like Portland to hold undeveloped water rights to support future growth. Unfortunately, as you've heard here today, the current law does not provide the clarity and certainty that Portland or other municipalities need to do responsible planning for this important community service. Portland holds statutory rights to the Bull Run and Little Sandy Rivers and significant developed and undeveloped groundwater rights in the Columbia South Shore Wellfield area. The Columbia South Shore Wellfield is used both as a summer supply, summer season supply, and also an emergency backup supply for the region. The city considers its undeveloped groundwater rights to be very important in meeting future demand, both in our retail and wholesale service areas. And like most other municipalities in Oregon, we have long considered the ability of municipalities to hold undeveloped rights to be a given under Oregon water law. Several years ago, however, Portland and other municipalities in the state recognized that growth in Oregon and increasing competition for water and for environmental and human uses required us to all look at different ways to ensure responsible use and stewardship of the state's water resources. To address these changing needs, we worked with the State Water Resources Department and their commission for 4 years to rewrite administrative rules for extending municipal water rights and for water management and conservation plans. The new rules require municipalities wanting to hold undeveloped rights to prepare and implement water management and conservation plans. We fully support this new process and agree that water use efficiency needs to be the cornerstone of water resource planning now and for the future. The new rules require that conservation be taken seriously by municipal water providers, and the rules give the state a new tool to effectively administer and the development of currently undeveloped water rights. The city of Portland takes seriously its stewardship role that comes with making water supplies available to its customers. The city has an active water conservation program, which was approved in the state in the year 2000. We have identified a 12 to 14% reduction in per capita water use since 92. Partly attributable to water efficiency programs that we support either locally or regionally. Our wholesale customers have also seen reductions in per capita use due to similar programs. In addition, the City of Portland has been actively engaged in planning and implementing programs to protect and restore fishery resources in the Bull Run Subbasin and the Sandy River watershed, and is specifically working on a program to address flow, temperature, and habitat impacts of the Bull Run source on threatened fish species. Based on a review of recently submitted water management conservation plans of other Oregon municipalities, and I'll say I've read Ben's new one and I've read their old one, and there's, you can tell that the rules have made a significant difference in the quality of plans that are out there. It's clear that we're taking the new direction seriously and that the bar has been raised on justifying development of undeveloped municipal water rights. We believe the state needs to provide time for these plans to be completed and implemented to recognize the value that this new process presents. Even with these substantial and ongoing commitments to resource conservation and stewardship practices, municipal water providers need to be able to rely on undeveloped rights to meet future growth. For example, in Portland, our undeveloped groundwater rights, which we have held since the mid-70s, provide the opportunity to incrementally increase supply to meet growing demand. When the Portland City Council approved its state legislative agenda in December of 2004, it included as a high priority new legislation to restore clarity and certainty to the municipal water rights application process. House Bill 3038 is necessary to ensure that Portland can continue to rely on its groundwater rights without the risk that they be taken away at some future time, in spite of the city's efforts to promote efficient water use and environmental protections. House Bill 3038 recognizes and addresses the realities of the public permitting and local decision-making processes for new water supply projects that can take many, many years before new or undeveloped rights can be put to beneficial use. the state statutory framework needs to recognize these realities. So again, we are in support of this bill, and I appreciate the time to come here and speak to you today, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rebecca. Are there any questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know to whom I should address this, but it's really clear when we talk about Bend and Portland that there is a water use there that's going to be, continue to get greater. I don't know if any of you were here on Monday when we heard testimony regarding, what is it, that town? What is it?
Lake Air Village.
Air Village.
Yeah. What was it? Lake what? Lake Wobegon?
Wrong part of the United States.
Is Adam going to come up today?
What?
Adam, is he coming up today?
What? Well, anyway, it is some town that is no longer a town that has a huge amount of water rights. So my concern in all of this, I hear from Bend and I hear from Portland, and it's obvious you're going to need the water in the future. But little town in the middle of nowhere that has a huge amount of water in its water rights. How do you propose that the state address that? Oh, I'm so glad there's not a quick answer. That makes me feel stupid. There is.
I think, Representative, that may be more relevant question for the department than it would be for a city that is trying to deal with its own problem.
I can understand that.
Without worrying about that.
I will stand corrected, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I just might, I agree with you. I think the Water Resources Department has a very good answer to that. And I will point out that it isn't just Bend or Portland or Salem. As an example, in our basin, Redmond, Madras, Bryanville, Sisters, Metolis, Culver, Maupin, and Bend have joined together along with the other ag groups to be willing to address this issue. So even the smaller communities are very cognizant of the need to preserve the resource. Maupin is an excellent example. I mean, Maupin is a small town, a very small population, but depends very heavily on the river for tourism, recreational uses, and therefore its economy. Bend is the same way, and every community in Central Oregon believes that protecting the Deschutes River is an absolute essential part of our economic growth and vitality, and the people who have moved to Central Oregon place a very high value on the Deschutes River. So I'm speaking from our cities in Central Oregon. I think it's universal that we do not want to do anything that is going to diminish that resource, and an awful lot of what we're trying to do right now is to allow more water to be left in stream and come up with ways to manage what we believe is a flat amount of water. We will not have any more water in the basin, so the question is, how do you manage that responsibility?
Great. Thank you, Doug.
I think good question, it's an important question, and one needs that does need discussion. I think Mr. Sussman is in the audience, and I believe he's heard your question and my comments, and will probably be prepared when he comes up to talk about that. But in the event that he does not, I would respectfully ask you to ask your question when he arrives.
I would be happy to do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. If there's no other questions.
Mr. Chair, can I just make one comment, if I may? And that's just to thank the leadership for Central, being shown right now, Central Oregon and the Deschutes Water Alliance. And I think this is what we need to see all over the state. And I think that watershed planning for water quantity is sorely needed in the state. And I've been involved in watershed planning for a long time and certainly like to see as much that's happening on the water quality side happen on the water quantity side, because we tend to separate it and they really can't be separated. So I commend you for taking leadership in that.
Thank you, Representative. I have, of course, only one minor problem with the testimony in both places. Nobody has ever mentioned how much money has gone into this as far as your cities and communities are concerned. And I suspect this is not without some cost
Mr. Chair, again, Patrick Griffiths, Water Resource Coordinator with the City of Bend. I can give you some rough numbers, and I'll do it in two ways. One is, when we made the jump from our first water management and conservation plan to the second, we not only invested city funds in the metering program and were able to add other pertinent features in the same investment with automated meter reading, cross-connection backflow protection at every service connection, and a whole bunch of other really good stuff. We looked at between $4.5 and $6 million alone on just the metering piece of it and the integrated planning that went with it. We probably spent over $100,000 on just the integrated planning that went into the WMCP with consultant work, staff work, and all the other pieces. This was the first year that we decided to do the water master planning at the same time we did the water management and conservation planning. And now we're adding our piece into, again, that basin-wide management piece. And there are literally millions of dollars being spent in the Deschutes. The other $500,000 I mentioned on the Deschutes Water Alliance grant is just the tip of the iceberg on what's waiting to be invested in that type of planning. So it's going on all over the basin. And then we have about 3 full-time staff now in the City of Bend, so those associated expenses. And we spend about $350,000 a year, roughly 5% of our water income, on conservation and that related stuff. So that's where we're at right now.
So it is not without significance, the money.
You are correct. And again, our biggest fear is if our water rates get out of balance with other water sources in the basin, you're going to see bad investment in other types of water development, whether it be dual pipe systems and from irrigation districts and other things. That, you know, there's no silver bullet here. The silver bullet is really working together to plan together, and that's what we have to keep things sort of in balance.
Thank you. Switching, I guess, our agendas, we have Scott Ashcombe, Paul Catton, is that correct? And Liz Frankel. And just for the record, Les Helgeson is not here. We have written testimony that will, or has been passed out, that will be part of the record. We'll read into the record at a later point in the committee hearing. Please, Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Ashcombe with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3038. The Oregon Agricultural Alliance is a general agricultural association of production farmers, ranchers, and nursery owners statewide. Many of our members are irrigators, and most of them irrigate relatively large blocks of farmland. As irrigators, we have a stake in this legislation. While it is our policy to oppose any substantive amendment to the 1909 Code, we will support House Bill 3038 with amendments. The part of the code amended by House Bill 3038-1 is an important keystone of Oregon's water law. Pertinent sections mandate that applicants for an irrigation or other water right show reasonable diligence in the construction of water delivery systems within 5 years of the date of approval of the permit. There are important reasons for this. The law was intended to prevent water users from acquiring permits with senior priority dates with the intention of making water unavailable to users with junior priority dates upstream, while not actually putting the water to a beneficial use. The law discourages that practice by requiring construction of water delivery systems for irrigation or other beneficial uses within 5 years. The Dash 1 amendments create an exception from this requirement for municipal water utilities. The cities have established the need for the proposed exception. We ask the committee to amend the Dash 1 draft as follows. On page 1, line 24, replace the period with a semicolon, insert the word and following the semicolon, then insert the following phrase, C. The Water Resource Commission amends the applicable basin program administrative rules to provide for the exception. And on page 4, line 7, replace the period with a semicolon, then insert the following phrase, C. The Water Resource Commission amends the applicable basin program administrative rules to provide for extension. The intent of these amendments is to allow the Water Resources Commission to evaluate need for the exception with comprehensive consideration of impacts on water resources in the particular basin in which the exception or extension may be exercised. We ask that the committee amend House Bill 3038 as we propose here. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Scott. Could I ask, were these amendments proposed to House Bill 3038 and the working group on it, or are these yours that come out after seeing the Dash 1 amendments, etc.?
Mr. Chairman, these amendments are proposed after we had a chance to look at the Dash 1 amendments. We were not invited to participate in the group.
I can understand that. That's still one of the obstacles we have to get over in this committee for that. Okay. Are there any questions for Scott?
Just one for clarification.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you.
Representing
Bowling. Thank you, Scott. Are your members subject all to the Division 86 rules?
Which division rules?
The Water Conservation Management Plans. Do your members have to do anything similar? Then I'm just trying to think about how this would apply, or is that strictly for municipalities?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dinkfelder, I did participate in the drafting of the statute that established the conservation management plans. With regard to the rules, insofar as they implement that statute, they apply to all appropriative users of water under a permit, including our irrigators.
Okay, so just a follow-up.
Quick follow-up.
So does that mean that do your members actually do a water conservation management plan similar to what the municipalities submit?
No, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dinkfelder, I really appreciate the opportunity to respond to this question. It really is it's impractical for an irrigator to avail himself of the benefits of a conservation management plan. It's just you'll note that that the reason that the statute was adopted was because a farmer is subject to forfeiture for non-use or for a change of use if he conserves his use of water. So the whole purpose of the statute was to create an incentive for irrigators to take advantage of a conservation management plan where they would be in effect exempt from the forfeiture provisions of statute for non-use, for the amount of water that they conserved. Now, that created a situation where an ordinary irrigator, in other words, the irrigators that I represent that may irrigate 160 acres or 320 acres or maybe 640 acres of cropland, it's just impractical for them to even apply for a conservation plan. Municipalities, on the other hand, if you think about the way water is used in a municipal utility, almost the entire water delivery system is practicing conservation. It's in pipes, it's in penstocks, it's in it's not subject to the kind of evaporation and loss that irrigation water in an open ditch would be subject to, or irrigation water delivered through a low head or even a high head sprinkler system or a big gun or a wheel line or a circle pivot is subject to. So it's really comparing apples and oranges.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, we lost a panel member.
Okay. Paul?
Thank you. Excuse me. My name is Paul Caton. I live in Otis, and I'm a scientist by profession. I'm a volunteer and presently president of the Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council in Lincoln City. And I'd like to speak out in opposition to House Bill 3038. I think this creates more opportunities of abuse of the permitting system and potentially negates all watershed councils do to improve streams because of speculation in water. Let me explain and tell you what some of our ongoing practices, our efforts, from the perspective of somebody in the trenches here. We heard a lot about excess water rights, and Representative Tomei just mentioned what should be done with some of these excess water rights. So let me tell you, give you an example of what should not be done with these excess water rights. Just south of Lincoln City is Kernville, Glen Eden Beach, Lincoln Beach Water District. They have 7 CFS, and it was somebody mentioned that earlier today, I believe, in Drift Creek. Presently, Kernville has a demand for 1.6 cubic foot, and their 2050 demand is 3. Well, there's 4 extra cubic foot out there that they can't show any demand for 50 years. Well, Kernville's lawyer cooked up a deal where Lincoln City is going to buy 1.5 cubic feet of that 4 cubic feet for $1.25 million. Now, wait a minute. Whose water is this? You know, this is excess water that they can't show any demand for, and why should they be able to sell it? You know, I think I've heard some speculation around here that there's some budget shortfalls. Maybe if Lincoln City is willing to go out there and spend $1.25 million for this water, maybe the state ought to sell it to them, not Kernville. I think this is a little excessive. Talk about windfall profits, or should I say rainfall profits. This is water that should rightfully remain in the stream, not be sold, in order to subvert in-stream rights. And that's all they're trying to do, is get under the in-stream rights window. We can plant trees to protect streams, but we can't do any good if there's no water left in those streams. And this is only the tip of the iceberg in this really ugly story. The rest of it's a far cry from the idealized picture that these people from Bend and Salem have been portraying. They seem like they have some good working relationships. Well, the lawyer from Kernville is well connected at Water Resources and actually wrote most of the draft proposed final order, which is very closely reflected in the final document. Only Lincoln City and Kernville had any input into this proposed final order. And unlike this idealized picture where you have some negotiation ongoing, once this thing is out there in the public, it's pretty much cut in stone, and it's very difficult to make any changes, especially when WR Water Resource appears to be bending over backwards to give away water. All of the outside groups were excluded from the writing of this document. Water Resources took no input from anybody else. They accepted the data given to them by Lincoln City and Kernville without question. We all did protest those proposed final orders. And for a number of reasons, they went back into secret negotiations for 18 months. Well, 18 months later, supplemental proposed final orders came out. And in spite of our written protest 18 months earlier, all of our comments were completely, 100% ignored, not included in there, not one bit. It's like saying to us, you concerned citizens don't matter. You know, we're going to do business as usual, and don't bother us with the facts. I'm frustrated. What makes matters worse, Lincoln City really has a hard time justifying this. A lot of it has to do with poor operation of their system. And I don't have time to go into all of the details, but let me just say, for the last 11 years, Lincoln City has had an average leak rate of 30%. And things are actually getting worse, because last year it went up 31%. But that's averaged over a year, that's 600,000 gallons a year that you're losing out through leaks in their system. That's enough for almost 2,000 families. I mean, that's a little excessive, I think. That's certainly a far cry from the rosy picture that's been painted on the last few days of how well things work in the permitting process to make things efficient. Nobody's holding their feet to the fire to really get efficient here. If interest is feeding things, let me just jump to my last example of another misuse of the permitting process. In 1993, Lincoln City submitted three different dams on three different streams, each with a dam capable of holding 1,250 acre feet of water. Each of these dams included a diversion permit. And these are not small dams. We're talking about 40-foot earthen dams. Well, in 1995, 6 proposed final orders were issued by Water Resources. Somehow all of these slipped under the radar, and no protests were ever submitted by any organization to counter these applications. Well, 10 years later, these have not been developed. Water Resources has asked them to cancel them, and Lincoln City has refused. Here we have another example of using the permitting process as a way to reserve water rights without really showing any need. As I said in the beginning, I'm a scientist and an unpaid volunteer with the Salmon Drift Creek Watershed Council. I just want to go out there and work to try to correct the mistakes of the past to make make better streams for the Oregon's fish. Yeah, I guess I find myself here in Salem trying to prevent actions that will lead to future destruction of these streams. And I think you really have to take a hard look at this bill, and especially these excess water rights out there that I don't know how this ever got through Water Resources, but maybe what you really ought to be doing is looking at Water Resources and the way they operate. I don't think they quite operate exactly as the rosy picture that Bend and Salem had put together. I'll end there if anybody has any questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chair. Representative Brown.
Are you going to submit some written testimony? Can we have a copy?
These are just written notes. I can put something together, but I don't have anything to submit.
Please do.
Okay. Ms. Frankel.
I'm Liz Frankel. I'm here representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And I have to begin with an extremely embarrassing statement. When I left the house this morning, I left with most everything except the testimony which I had prepared for Monday is home on my counter in the kitchen. I wish, if I may, if I can turn that in tomorrow and have that for the record, my deep apologies. And I would also like to make a very brief comment. As you know, the League is very interested in process. They're very interested in public interest. When I began the League many, many years ago, and I hate to tell you how many, many years ago,
it wouldn't scare me.
I won't mention it. It was in water that I got interested. And this was where I learned that the waters of the state belong to the citizens of the state. And that was a very impressive thing. I also learned, I was involved in the Columbia River Basin study that we did mid-70s when we did that. Anyway, there have been a lot of studies. I've been listening today, and one of the things that people keep talking about planning, and I find this very interesting because it didn't used to be that we talked about water and planning. Now we are. But I keep thinking about facts in terms of planning. Waters of the state, of course, have to be put to beneficial uses. And we obviously need to plan for the fish. That's the Oregon plan. And we need to plan for growth. And there's been lots of talk about planning for growth. We need to plan for jobs, economic development, all of these, including, by the way, fish. We assume that growth is part of this. And I think that it's kind of an interesting thought when you think about how we're going to be planning for the water when we have the bill before you, which puts a huge, enormous time frame on one aspect of planning, which is the planning for growth of people in cities. I would assume and hope that we have the same, should I say, bias for other beneficial uses and their growth as well. This is why the League is concerned about this bill. We're not sure that this makes the whole process transparent. We're not sure that this whole process involves the public in the fashion that it perhaps could. And with that, I'll close and give you my testimony tomorrow.
Thank you very much, because we certainly will be more than pleased to enter your testimony tomorrow, and I'm sure that the members will look closely at it. I do have a request with that when you submit it, though. Since the league is worried about process, let me say the chair is also worried about process, and we would like to know the league's process of how they get to their position on this.
It's explicit in our testimony, and I will add a little note making sure that you get that as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we are going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3038, and we are going to open a public hearing on whatever it is.
2600.
House Bill 2600. But, and having said that, we will carry 3038 over to a work session on Monday, and we will have invited testimony at that work session, and one of those will be Mr. Sussman from the Department of Water Resources. The reason for not having Mr. Sussman up now, given the hour that we have, I don't believe that we will have time to get through that testimony, so we'll take care of other business if you wish first. And it looks like I can have, I don't know, is this going to be a confrontation? I have three people signed up on this.
I think you should make them all come up together.
Mr. Tiffany, Ms. Russell, and Mr. Sussman. I'm not sure that this is...
I'll sit right next to you.
You have promised to play nice.
And if you'd start off, if you would, Willie, with the reasons that you're proposing this legislation.
Okay. You got it, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think we can be real brief today about this bill. House Bill 2600 does a very simple thing. There's a provision in the statute for municipalities that allows them to partially perfect a water right in 25% increments. You've heard a lot of discussion over the last two hearings about how municipalities develop water, and they do it differently than other water users, and so that is an allowance for municipalities who haven't fully developed their water but have developed their water in some way to go ahead and partially perfect some of that water such that they can use the transfer statutes or other statutes. We introduced this bill last session, introduced it again this session as a placeholder, and the concept really is based on the testimony that you've heard from municipalities on the previous bill. There is a new way for municipalities to move through the extension process, and it's a very incremental planning sort of process versus where we were at just 4 years ago in terms of permit extensions. And we think that it's prudent as municipalities move through that process that they actually perfect as they go. So they certificate those water rights as they put it to beneficial use rather than waiting, as we had under the last process, waiting until the full development of that water right, because quite frankly, through this process, that whole water right may not be able to be developed under this new process. So that provides a lot more certainty for municipalities. We don't believe it's an increase in any of the water that would be put to use. It just allows them to move through the perfection process a little quicker. We introduced the bill, Mr. Chair, this session as an opportunity, hopefully, to work with Water Watch, who had opposed the bill traditionally, and the department. The bill also does have a fee, an increase for the department to pay for these extra requests for certificates as they come through the process. We would not
worry about that. Yeah. We can eliminate the fee.
That seems to be troubling for many members of the legislature. We don't propose to move this bill. In fact, with this other issue hanging in the balance of the legislature, really needs to be decided before we even talk about whether there will be municipal permits to be perfected for that matter. So we would like to use this bill, Mr. Chair, as an opportunity, hopefully in the interim, to work with the people seated at the table here as well as any others who are interested, and see if we can come about to some agreement and come back to this body, hopefully in the interim form of a committee to talk about how municipalities could use this process as a kind of adjunct to the management and conservation planning process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Ms. Russell.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Karen Russell, Senior Staff Attorney for Water Watch of Oregon in Portland. I handed out testimony, as Willie indicated, we opposed this bill last session, and we continue to oppose it today. Three basic reasons. First, it's unclear as to why this suggested change is needed. Municipalities already have more flexibility than is accorded any other water user in the state. They can currently partially perfect a quarter of their water use permits if they develop them. And we just don't see the justification for expanding their ability to perfect lesser amounts. Second, I think there's an issue of fairness. Basically, municipalities already enjoy flexibility, like I said, to partially perfect their water rights. No other water right holder enjoys that, and to allow an even greater exception for municipalities will only increase what many see as an already existing inequity in the law. And then my third point is, we are concerned that this is yet another attempt to lock up water that's not necessarily used or even needed. Currently, the Water Resources Department allows municipalities to get permanent water rights, basically certificated water rights, based upon a one-time four-hour pumping of water at their peak rate. The water doesn't have to be used beneficially at the time of that four-hour pump. And the way we understand it, the department assumes that if it enters the municipality system, it's beneficially used. So they don't even know if the water is actually put to beneficial use or if 30% of it is lost to waste. And no other water user in the state is allowed to perfect a water right that they haven't shown that they've actually beneficially used. And I've attached to my testimony an internal memo as Exhibit 1 by the department that kind of explains this practice. And the memo does say, well, they have to beneficially use the water, but then if you read the memo more closely, it says what I just said, which is basically they assume that if the water goes into the municipal system, it's assumed to be used. So we're just very concerned that increasing the ability of municipalities to perfect water more incrementally would result in even greater perfections that were occurring when actual beneficial use hadn't happened. It wasn't likely to happen. And we know that across Oregon, in the case of Drift Creek is one example. The city of Lincoln City has several certificated water rights on several different streams that they're not using right now. And they're saving them to resuscitate them potentially sometime in the future or to save them as trading chips for future development. Once municipalities get permits certificated, it's very hard for those certificates to go away. So we're very concerned about increasing the ability for them to lock up water in certificate status just because of the kind of stockpiling that some of them have done around the state with certificates, and also because of the department's practice that we think may allow certificates to be issued when water isn't actually being beneficially used. And with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Ms. Russell? You do get to talk today, Adam.
For the record, Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department. And rather than argue with Water Watch in front of you about how we conduct our business, I'll just take Willie's lead, and I would be happy to work with both parties at the table during the interim to see if we can
move through the issues associated with this bill. I did want to reiterate in my testimony that this does have a fiscal impact associated with expenditure limitation of the department that's not in the governor's recommended budget. And for that reason, we'd have to resolve that before we could fully support the bill. Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Sussman.
Yes.
Why is it you always leave it up to the chair to argue with Water Watch?
We
don't have to answer that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Gets to do it with me all the time.
Are there other questions for any of the three? If not, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2600. And I am being... I'm being gently tapped by staff, indicating there are some agenda items that need to be brought to your attention, which she's in the process of doing now, and we will turn the mic over to Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2 seconds. We have follow-up material from our Monday testimony on 3038. I didn't want to pass it out with the current panels, but we have supplemental testimony from Richard Glick. And then in response to some of the permits and around the Portland area, Portland Sue Schneider submitted a chart of existing permits, priority dates, the holder, the extended application, et cetera, et cetera. That's there for your information also.
Good.
That is it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, and
talk about Friday,
you know? We are scheduled on Friday to go to the hatchery at Fall Creek.
Correct.
And our agenda leaving time is going to be...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 10 o'clock. We'll be leaving the building at 10 o'clock. That should still give you a little bit of time after the floor session. I will be giving you a distinct timeline. The vans will be down in the basement picking up the key. We have some other staffers going also, as well as Natural Resource Subcommittee, Ways and Means folks are going. There's about three of those, so we'll have a pretty good crowd. We will have lunch. We will do the tour, and then we will go back to the Alcee Grange Hall and have our overview from the department. And it is our hope to get everybody back here to Salem by 4:30, or right in that window.
And so what time are we going to leave?
The van, we're going to try and leave around 10-ish, so...
Okay, I'll have my own transportation.
Right, and I'm going to get you a map, or unless you, you know, I knew that you were driving.
Fall Creek Hatchery, right?
Right, you know how to get there?
I get... Fairly general idea.
Okay. There's no other questions. Items for the good of the order. Adjourned. Thank you.